Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Thanks to the superstar Jenny Green for bopping us along for the last 3 hours. Jenny's back tomorrow at 3. It's Wednesday, the 21st of October, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, a major blow to minor stars. We've reaction to the pausing of the GAA underage season.
These young fellas are in school, they're doing everything right during the day, and when they were coming in with us, they were temperature checked every night to come into training. We had a marquee with the sides lifted up when we needed to chat to them, so we were chatting to them in open air. Everything has been done to perfection and as best we can. It's just very, very frustrating at this stage when you hear the word paused, and due to the lack of clarity that has come out of this, what does the word pause mean even at this stage? Are they going to revisit in January, February?
Connors and Keenan get the nod as Andy Farrell names his team to face Italy in Ireland's returning Six Nations.
Obviously, we've had a few days together, see how they fit into the new systems, etc. And the pressures of international rugby, being able to adapt pretty quickly to all new calls, etc. And adapt to the pressures of international rugby and the new teammates, etc. So.
We've Conan Byrne on hand to preview Dundalk's Europa League return, and when the world stops watching, Damien Lawler on his new book about life after elite sport.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM. Marie, I left the gym this morning and I was thinking the next time I return here I could actually look like Santa, and I'm not talking about growing a beard. Gym's closed for 6 weeks, I don't think it's a good look for me, but it is good news for one of our lucky listeners, because our super sponsors, Green Firm, have a brilliant prize for you tonight. They've just launched their new range of on-the-go, tree-high-protein chicken snacks, which are all 100% natural, and as we've spoke about many times, have a really good little recyclable skewer, which means you can eat them anywhere. So tonight's prize is a fantastic wellness hamper, and I think this is vital for anyone that's looking to improve over the next 6 weeks. It's full of goodies. There's a Fitbit in there so you can keep track of your movement. There's a Nutribullet so you can make sure you're making healthy smoothies and snacks. And there's resistant bands, of course, so that you can keep tipping away at your training. And there's also a load of Green Firm products, which we know are top of the range and brilliant to keep you in top shape.
It really is a fantastic prize. I'd love to win it myself. And as for you in the gym, you could always go outside and run.
Yeah, I'm a big old unit for running, and people don't like me running around the place when you're running on pavements, or you just look odd. Yeah, we'll go into it another time.
So if anyone wants to win, they have to answer the following question. Who are the current All-Ireland Senior Ladies Football Champions? Text the word green, followed by your answer and name to 51552, and we'll pick a winner before the end of the show. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. Go to 2fm.ie for more details. So yeah, there is speaking of gyms closing, it's not the only thing that's closing. Golf courses are going to close now as well. It was announced just before we come on air that because of level 5 restrictions, the ones that come into effect at midnight tonight, that all golf courses are going to close. There was a huge amount of discussion and debate about this. Nobody was really sure what was going to happen, because earlier this year courses were exempt during the first lockdown, and the hope, I think, from a lot of golf fans, both casual and dedicated, they were hoping that they would stay open. But discussions today with Sport Ireland and the Golfing Union of Ireland and the Irish Ladies Golfing Union have confirmed that the clubs will be forced to close for 6 weeks. So this is an absolute huge blow for golf fans, and there's been a huge amount of reaction to it online as well. And if anyone has an opinion, text us on 51552. It's one of those things, don't okay, you kind of see both sides of it as well, because when you think of the first lockdown and even over the last few months, like, there doesn't seem to have been any issues arising from golf courses that, you know, we were made aware of in a major way anyway. The compliance seemed to be quite good. There was the 5 kilometre rule, which was debated as well. So you'd imagine that the way things stand, that it would be members only attending. But unfortunately for golf fans, they will be closed. But I'm sure, like everything, there are reasons for it, and we will probably be made aware of them at some stage. But it is a blow right now for golf fans.
Absolutely. And you're right. I'd love to hear people's views on it. 51552, or you can tweet us at GameOn2FM. Are you frustrated that golf, a game that seems like it's made for socially distancing,
you would think so. It's outside. People can stay far away. Like, yeah, exactly. They're not going to clubhouses afterwards.
No. Yeah, it seems. But look, there's a A lot to a week.
Yeah, there was discussions about it today, and I'm sure that there are plenty of good reasons for why golf courses would be closed. It is, as it stands at the moment, a 6-week spell, early December. Everything you'd imagine might come back into play a little bit, but look, who knows? It's a tough time for sports fans, but there's be plenty of sport on the television for people to watch anyway, so that's good.
I think they've closed it down because of the silly outfits, those kind of pants and jumpers. Just no man or woman should be wearing them. So 6 weeks off could be good for all the golfers to just review their wardrobe, take the time and just maybe think, could I be wearing smarter clothes? I'm in trouble for that, am I?
You're in trouble for that, I'd say. And I imagine we're going to get some texts about that, Donica, slagging off the attire of golf fans. Rugby players slagging off the way golf players dress. Okay, where do we go from there? Right, we are actually going to go to Gaelic Games because we're going to stick with the themes of sport not happening. And earlier today, after a lot of debate and discussion and speculation, the GAA confirmed that the under 20 and minor inter-county competitions are going to pause from midnight tonight, like the golf as well, until further notice because of level 5 restrictions that we are moving to tonight as a result of COVID-19. So anyone who has been following the underage knows that there are a huge amount of games to take place. I think notably the under 20 All-Ireland final between Dublin and Galway was supposed to take place on Saturday, so you can imagine the blow for those lads who were training for that. And also then there are games tonight. The Leinster under 20 hurling fixtures are going to proceed, so there is a lot going on, a lot for young people to deal with as well. So we are joined now by Diarmaid Mullins, who is the Limerick hurling manager, and Damien Lawler as well. Damien, I'm actually going to go to you first, if that's okay, because I have to say that this has been an absolute saga over the last 24 hours, and you just wonder how we got to a stage that it developed into to such a saga like that. Can you just bring us up to speed on what's happened?
Yeah, I'd say it's been a saga over the last 24 weeks, be more like it. But I think that last night, you know, it started to emerge that despite indications to the contrary, that NFIT and the government were not going to give the go-ahead for inter-county games except senior to go ahead. The understanding had been up until then that inter-county games could go ahead at elite level. And the understanding was again that under 17 and under 20 fell under that bracket. Then it emerged last night in a further clarification letter from NFIT to the government that the word senior was inserted back in. So that changed everything. And at this morning then, a government press secretary confirmed to RTE that yes indeed, senior inter-county was all that could go ahead. And even with that revelation, further clarification had to be sought from the Department of Sport, even once that that revelation had been made. So it was an almighty mess, and I think then Croke Park were left to, I suppose, to deal with this and maybe try and salvage the under 20 football final on Saturday and try and make sense out of what was going to happen. But pretty early on in the discussions, it became apparent that the under 20 wasn't going to be saved. And even though we were awaiting official clarification, Galway chairman Pat Carney spoke to local media and confirmed there that Saturday's All-Ireland final would not go ahead. I was in contact with the Dublin manager, the under 20 manager, Tom Gray, who like Dermot there, has come up through the ranks and taken a lot of jobs and learned from every one of them. And you can imagine his disappointment, but Tom didn't want to make any comment at this particular moment in time, and that's quite understandable as well. I think people are just getting to grips with this information today. From a GAA point of view, around the 4th of October, when there was a meeting between executives and regional representatives and even county chairpersons, there was a question asked, like, should the under 17 competition continue at that juncture? And I think we were going up the levels in terms of case numbers and positive case numbers, and there was a degree of uncertainty rising. And I think the push was made at that meeting that minor might actually be just postponed for this year. However, from the floor to Croke Park executives, the push for minor to be retained was huge. And another significant development along the way was when the Northern Ireland Assembly, when they went to level 4 and they raised the restrictions, they deemed minor and under 20 to be part of elite sport as well, and both were allowed to continue. Again, when we went to level 5, all the early indications were that minor and under 20 would continue, and that was the case right up to last night. With clarification this morning, everybody was left in a scramble, and it results now in the games being played tonight. I've just been in touch with Offaly. They're down a few players, but they're playing against Westmeath in the Leinster under 20. But after tonight, that's it. There's a pause. There's a pause on everything.
Okay, well, Diarmaid Mullins, Limerick minor hurling manager, also joins us on the line. Diarmaid, you're directly affected by this. You have to go now, and I'm sure you probably already have, and spoke to speak with the players, who obviously it's a devastating blow for them. What's your reaction to this news?
Thanks, Maria. Well, I suppose, look, it's a mixture of disappointment and frustration, you know. I think for the players, I'm really disappointed. You know, young players that have given a huge amount of time since this time last year when we were, you know, trialing for the minor championship, and all of the training that they've put in place, an awful lot of work by the 12th of March when we got to the lockdown situation. And then even during the lockdown, you know, the lads kept in touch on Google Classroom and Zoom sessions for strength and conditioning, and then to come back. And even though we were going to miss out on the round robin aspect of the Munster Minor Championship that was brilliant last year, you know, and we were fortunate enough to be successful, but even if you weren't successful, it meant minor players were playing before the senior games. It was a huge amount of player development. Like, minor isn't all about winning competitions, it's about developing players. So I just feel really, really disappointed for the young lads and the players that this has been the case. I think there's a sense of frustration, though, from our point of view and from talking to other minor managers about the lack of communication or effective communication from the GA. I think that's most disappointing for the young players that are involved. Like, really, as Damien outlines there, you know, on Monday night we were training and we knew if it went to level 5, the Tánaiste had said last week that inter-county action may not take place. So I think there was an onus on the GA and on John Horan and on Tom Ryan as Director General to when it was moved to level 5, to clarify with the government what was going to be the situation regarding minor and under 20. And I think that's been very, very disappointing. And really, you know, as John Fogarty from the Irish Examiner, and, you know, Paul Cunningham from the RTE that did the investigation around whether or not it would happen. So I think the GA really, you know, owes an apology to young players about how they've been treated. I think, you know, the communication shouldn't have been through the media. You know, some players this morning, when they got up, that was the first time that they'd heard that this was on the cards, considering it had been moved to level 5 on Monday. So, like, I work in a school where we have 3 of our players around the minor panel, and I met one of the parents this morning, and she was asking me, you know, what was the story, and I didn't know. So I think the level of communication from the GA in making the decision has been very, very poor, and I also think pausing the competitions isn't a very logical decision at the moment either, because in reality, Marie, we've 6 weeks would bring us to the 2nd of December. Championships aren't going to resume at minor level at that stage. So I think they would have been better to make a clear decision, which would be, do we move to under 18 next year for this cohort? And also the 20s missed out playing minor because of the change from 17s to 18s. So I think they need to be clearer now in their communication for the young players that are involved.
Damien, let's look at that communication, because we are always very quick to criticise the government when there isn't enough communication, and it is very hard to disagree with Diarmaid here, because if you wanted to find out what was going on with the GA over the last couple of days, it was virtually impossible, because they haven't come out and spoken publicly to their members, and there's a huge amount of them who are in that situation, like young people who don't know whether they're coming or going. They're relying on journalists nearly to tell them whether their competition are going ahead, and these are people who've put in a huge amount of work. And, you know, even over the last couple of days when we've heard about the rapid testing and just situations going on within inter-county setups and teams stepping away from competitions and not fulfilling fixtures, there's been a huge communication void from the GAA, I feel.
Yeah, there's just so much going on, and I think you woke up this morning, you were there like, what is actually happening here? And you're, I suppose, you're investigating, you're trying to find out, you're wondering then, like, I mean, personally, the change from under 17 to 18 was one I never agreed with, but you're wondering, should the whole thing have been called off a while ago? And then you're trying to say to yourself, surely the under 20 can be saved, and the under 20 hurling could be run off in a swift enough a compact form as well. So, like, I think the only thing I can say there is that I have never seen a government do so many U-turns and have so much misinformation coming out. And I have to say that Croke Park have been taking their lead from Enfit. And with everything changing twice a day sometimes and mixed messages coming from different politicians, there's a difficulty in that. And also too, I suppose, when you accept that, now, you would have to go a long way to be assured that minor and under 20 were part of elite inter-county. But once that was given as granted and you're allowed to proceed with your jobs, I suppose player surveys, they've had teams pulling out, they've had walkovers, they've had criticism over testing. I think they're firefighting, and I think there's so many issues coming in there that it's very, very difficult, because they are an amateur association at grassroots level, and talking about all the members and coaches and that. And you're trying to keep up to date with a situation that's really going beyond those at times, and you're depending then on regulation from a government that is full of mixed messages, really. So the whole thing is just a mess. There's no point in saying otherwise. And it leaves the people like Dermot and even Leo O'Connor, who I chatted to today, the Offaly minor manager and a Limerick native who Dermot would know quite well. Just like, they've had to deal with three lockdowns in Offaly. I mean, they've had one in March, they've had one in August, and today's one as well. And they were beaten by Kildare last year, and they had managed to kind of steady the ship. They beat Laois a few days ago. It was a massive result for them, and they were looking forward to another tilt at Kildare, and pause. They don't know when they're playing again. Maybe January could be an option. I don't know. So that's kind of where we're at.
Do you expect a statement from the GAA at any stage? And I think the word pause there, which was highlighted by Dermot, yeah, would, I mean, that could do with clarification.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm trying to think in my own calendar, when can you play this? Like, when can you realistically play this? If the numbers were down and we came out of this in December, could it be played then under lights? Like, I don't know. I mean, is January a chance to play it off? It is, but I mean, at this stage, like, you'd have to say it's a rush job then to get a championship set up and finished off, because next year you're going into an Allianz League, you're going into the college competitions, you're going into a split season again, potentially. But I think everything's going to be greatly compacted next year by the looks of it.
Dermot, what are the players saying to you? That uncertainty at that age isn't great. You know, young men that are studying or beginning work or whatever it is, to call it at this point, what are your players saying?
Well, we're going to meet our players tonight at 8 o'clock via Zoom, and I'm sure they're disappointed. And in fairness to Donegal, to young people, like, I think there's been a lot of criticism maybe of young people during the process of this crisis, but they're very resilient, and they've been excellent in how they've dealt with the lockdown situation, because they've missed out on an awful lot in terms of their training and playing of games and the expectations they would have had at the start of the season. I think, you know, the GA, I know Damien is saying that, you know, they have to take the lead from the government, but if you look at it from a young player's point of view, you know, it was moved back to under 17 level, I suppose, not to avoid maybe clashes with leaving certificates and different reasons like that. But I suppose you'd feel that you hadn't had a fair crack at it this year. So I think a young person would prefer either cancel this year's competition and make a clear cut and let people move on with what they have to do, because, you know, it's not the end of the world in the overall scheme of a pandemic that we're in at this stage. There's far more. I don't want to come across here as, you know, obsessed about the minor hurling championship. Like, there's wider issues at play in terms of society. But then make a decision. Are you going to go to under 18 next year? Would you play it, as Damien says, maybe from February to the end of March, conclude that under 18 competition, and then let the under 17 competition play hopefully next summer if we're in a better place around that? And then with the under 20s, you know, presumably the GAA should try and play the football final because there's only one game to be left in it. Do they want to play an under 21 championship in hurling next year, because those players did miss out at minor level? I just think there needs to be clarity. I think young people need direction and guidance and good communication around this, because, you know, are they going to really hang on for the next 5 or 6 weeks on the whim of maybe something be played in December? And do we really believe that the championship will start again in December? I think we could be looking now at playing championships for the sake of playing it, and I don't think that's ever a good idea, you know.
Dermot, you spoke about development, but what we've seen in other sports is it's going to be massive squads now. Will there be a time where we actually, maybe not all, but there's a cohort of young players there that are at the level, that are elite enough, that will be needed to step up?
I think players, even though we haven't had competition this year, I'd say players in all of the different squads have developed like throughout the year. Like, for example, our lads, even on Zoom calls doing the strength and condition session, you know, we ended up in a situation where we got three or four of our guys each night to design what the strength and condition session was going to be, present that to our players. Like, that was an education for them, that was a learning from them, that was very, very valuable. I think what we need to look at is, in terms of the GAA, sometimes our decisions aren't really made by the best interests of the young people that are involved. For example, even if we were going to play in the next couple of weeks, we have a panel of 33 players. They were only going to allow 24 to tug out on any given day, and that's absolutely fine. We understand that. But they weren't then going to allow those players to travel to watch the game, even having trained for the duration of the year. I think decisions like that, you know, will turn players away from playing sport. I think you have to, you know, make sure that you make the right decisions to keep people involved. I find in my own job as a principal in a school in Limerick that actually we don't have competitive games taking place, obviously, at the moment, but we still have extracurricular training taking place. And an awful lot of kids need that training. They need the non-contact training that's taking place. They need to be out. They need to be in the fresh air, getting those kind of exercise in. So that's crucial. So I think, you know, the GAA, all right, they have competitions to play, but they need to start making better decisions, I think, for these players into the future.
Dermot, look, we really appreciate you taking the call. I think there's no winners in this, but I want to point something out. I think one of the pictures of this pandemic was Cara Finn's Geraldine Cal. It's in the Clare Champion. Her sons, Garode and Dermot, played for the Clare Under-20s and Thurles earlier in the week. And there's a picture of her on their Twitter, and she's sitting out in the car after driving her two sons to Thurles, watching them play on a laptop. And I just thought, wow, 2020, that is just some image. And it's so disappointing for everyone involved, because they're the moments that you want, and they're the moments that so many people aren't going to get. Look, we know we're in a pandemic, and it is hard to be critical of decisions because we don't know what is going on behind the scenes, but I think it's fair to point out that it is a tough time for everyone. Dermot, thanks so much for taking the call. We appreciate it. Damien, as always, thanks so much, and we'll have you back on in a little while in the show to chat about your book. For now, we're going to we're going to take a very quick break, and then we're back to look ahead to Dundalk's Europa League game.
With Green Farm, a quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. There was a lot going on today. Andy Farrell named his Irish squad, and we have two debutants starting, Will Connors and Hugo Keenan, who's been hugely exciting playing with Leinster, and one of these guys that's really taken his opportunity, gone into Irish camp, and obviously been very impressive to make a team. But it's a strong squad for me. I like the looks of it. Obviously, there's no Tadhg Furlong because he's injured, and Ian Henderson is out through suspension. But the likes of Robbie Henshaw, that was a tight call for me. I think Robbie Henshaw being on the bench, I think you have to start Gary Ringrose. He's been the best player in the country for a while. But Bundy Aki getting the nod with Ringrose is really interesting. And Andy Farrell was chatting about that earlier on, and this is what he had to say.
Obviously, we've had a few days together, see how they fit into the new systems, etc., and the pressures of international rugby, being able to adapt pretty quickly to all new calls, etc., and adapt to the pressures of international rugby and the new teammates, etc. So, obviously, Will's been involved with us before. He's been chomping at the bit for a while, and he had a 7-month break to think about that, and he's come back in pretty good form. So we're excited about seeing him. And obviously Hugo, he's had a great start after lockdown. You know, he's an exciting player that can play in a variety of different ways. And they're both ready to go. All five of the centres always seem to be fit, which is a great place to be. We have massive trust in Robbie, and he's going to come off the bench and do a great job. But Stu McCluskey and Chris Farrell are a great players that we all really admire, certainly as coaching staff. And you're able to have conversations in camp to be able to tell the truth and show them where they're at.
Yeah, really interesting to hear his thoughts on that. And you know, it's great to actually have young players around the squad as well.
And Marie, fit players, Donegal.
Fit players are always always helpful to have. Yeah, Ed Byrne as well on the bench. James Gibson Park, they could come on to make their debuts. But then there's the three lads from Connacht on the bench as well, and Filney, Bealham, Ulton Delan and David Heffernan. So good to see. I think probably the ones that, if you're looking for impact from your bench, bringing off, as we said, Gary Ringrose and Peter O'Mahony certainly is good to have within the squad.
Peter not starting, were you surprised?
I like the balance of that back row. Of course, you're surprised, but when you're not winning, Marie, that's how ruthless it is. I think it's an informed back row, and it's a back row to play to the... It's wrong to call it the new rules, but the new interpretation of the rules. So we've seen with Wasps, who were going to play in the final. We were chatting about it last night. They've got the all clear, but Wasps have excelled over the last few weeks since they've come back from lockdown, and it's been on the back of their back row. They've been able to poach ball because no players are allowed to survive the breakdown a little bit longer. And I actually think with that Connors, Doris and Sandler back row, they're going to compete. I think it's going to be a really good back row to watch to see how they go and how they perform.
There was one that I was quite interested in. It was Jacob Stockdale. So yeah. There was some quotes from Andy Farrell. He said he's learning the trade pretty quickly in the backfield. He is learning to adapt and get stronger there. We think he's all the attributes to push forward in that position. Should he be learning your trade on international duty?
Well, it's very hard. It's probably been fast forward by Jordan Larmour being injured. I don't know as well. Fullback, it's such a difficult position. You don't know how good one is until they're kind of gone. And I think we had someone like Rob Kearney that was just, you know, first name on the sheet for so long. I've seen Jacob play there, and he's an incredible talent. Personally, I like him on the wing. I really do. And looking at that back three, I know it's massively talented. I like Andrew Conway at 15, but when Andy Farrell was chatting about it, he said, you know, there's more to Stockdale's game than he's probably performing at the moment. So if a coach can spot it, and to be honest, they're the ones in the know, but Andy Farrell would have a good nose for something like that. If he can get Jacob Stockdale to start picking up these types of lines, he could be a weapon in our attack. He's certainly an outstanding winger. It's to be proven at fullback, which is... it's such a difficult position, it really
is. There's nowhere to hide. And the pressure on him as well, you know, because if his form in the last while hasn't been what you'd expect from him, you know, what he had shown over the last few years. So it's really difficult for him. But look, he does have the opportunity. And when you get that opportunity, you have to grab it. Josh Van de Fleer as well, Donica. He seems to be really unlucky to miss out.
Yeah, and who he's missing out to are his teammates. Like we said, Connors and Doris, you know, they're guys that... that can happen sometimes, Marie, if you're performing and playing well for your province. Like, to be fair to Josh Van der Fleer, I don't think I've ever seen him play a bad game. He constantly goes out.
I think Andy Farrell actually said that. He's done absolutely nothing wrong. How frustrating would that be?
He's probably just too sound. You know that? One of these guys that's easy to drop. So, I think that's a good back row. The interesting one for me is probably, and Lou, you're going to go, oh, surprise, surprise, the front row, Andrew Porter, Keane Healy. And
love the front row.
I love the front row. As we saw with the Leinster performance against Saracen, have all the backs you want, but this is where it'll be decided. And look, you know how other coaches will view things, and the Italians will come after a scrum. They always have. You know, they really rate scrummaging, and it's important. And I think they would have looked at that Saracens game and seen the likes of Keane and Andrew underperforming, which is most unlike them. But I think hopefully Rob Herring can kind of strengthen up that. It's amazing how a scrummaging hooker really helped. So
it feels like Italy is the right game for this team, just to get going.
Do you know what? I always said it. You never get any credit for beating Italy. It's a disaster. You play Italy, it's the most physical game. Like, if you remember, Jordan Larmour hurt his shoulder playing against Benetton. Italy is up there with South Africa in terms of physicality. They don't go around you. They run right over the top. And it's the one, if you win by 12 points, everyone goes, Gene, he should have beaten Italy by far more. It's not that easy. It's going to be a really tough game. It's going to be hard, the fact that it's in the Aviva, and it's going to be a little bit quieter. But I think we've a strong team there. And I like what Andy Farrell was saying, that he's not looking for... the players to take the weight of lifting the country, but they need to know that they have to perform as well. So I think we could see a bit of a performance. But I like the balance within the team, especially the back row.
What about Conor Murray? In the last Six Nations, this one, the early one, the one that we had first, there was so much conversation about him. You'd have to imagine that the break would probably have done him good.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think what we're struggling with Conor is what we realise, well, for me, Conor Murray is world class, and he's been a little bit below that at the moment, which still makes him international class. But there's no one clipping at his heels either. If you look at what went on, maybe Luke McGrath, John Cooney, these guys are struggling to keep their provincial form, so you can't breathe down his neck. And, you know, I still think... you know, for me, Conor Murray starts every day of the week. He's just look, an awful lot of people go on about the amount of box kicks, but that is a strategy, a plan from coaches, you know, and he's got to execute it. And to be fair to him, he executes his box kicking better than anyone. And I was reading today, Brian O'Driscoll just made a really valid point, and it goes from any nine from under eights all the way up to senior. He's got the best pass. He really does. His passing is far superior to the rest. But other guys got to smell blood in the water now and start going after him and stop fighting it out among their provinces. Guys have got to, you know, that's how you get there, Marie. You lay it down with your province, and that's how you can put real pressure on.
Well, we might run over this again tomorrow because we have Rob Kearney on to talk about his book, and we'll get his opinion on the fullback situation in Ireland. There are a couple of Champions League games ongoing. The big one and the big news one is that Real Madrid are currently trailing Shakhtar Donetsk 2-0. We will have more football after this break.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, tomorrow, for just the third time, a League of Ireland side will be involved in the group stages of a major European competition when Dundalk hosts Mullsy in the Europa League. And former League of Ireland footballer Conan Byrne joins us now. I say host, Conan, but I mean in Intala Stadium, which technically isn't hosting, but, you know, they're going to have them over anyway.
Absolutely, Marie, yeah, and they'll be used to it. Back in 2016, when they were last in the Europa League, that was their base for the games against AZ Alkmaar, Maccabi Tel Aviv, and Zenit St. Petersburg as well. So they'll be very well used to the occasion, to the ground. Pity that the fans obviously can't enter, but sure, that's the sign of the times.
Everyone's kind of used to that, I think, now, though.
I think so. I played in League of Ireland grounds, Marie. There's sometimes only a man
true.
And a dog there anyway. So
yeah.
I'm sure they would be used to it. But having said that, once that whistle goes, they'll be fully focused on the game and unaware of the surroundings.
Conan, just on that though, you need sometimes with the step up, isn't it, for you know, big games, you do need the crowd. You know, knowing that it's Europe and that it's hard to get into, there's a different emotional attachment with the crowd.
Sometimes, Duncan, but then other times, maybe in big games, the pressure from those games kind of are in the stands. And when that's not there, that takes everything away. And like even the young players that are going to be playing in this game, that they don't have that pressure on their shoulders of maybe if they make a bad touch in the first couple of minutes that the fans aren't on their back straight away. So it's actually, I actually think it's a good thing for Dundalk coming into the Europa League with the games behind closed doors.
So let's talk about their form, because they've had a lot of games and they've a lot coming up. How do you think they're set heading into this one?
Oh, not too bad. Like, Giovinoli has come in, and as I talked about with you guys before, like, he's only lost one of his ten games that he's been in charge, and that one was against Shamrock Rovers when they were playing their second string that night. The last four games, they only conceded one goal. They've only scored four goals in those games, though, two of those have been nil-all stalemates. So for every game, I think, they play in Europe this season, they will need to raise their game 100% on their domestic form. They're up against Malta, who lost out in the Champions League group stages on away goals to Ferencváros of Hungary after conceding an 87th minute penalty as well. So they were so close to making the group stages of the Champions League. And yes, they mightn't have household names in their ranks. They're currently 16 points behind Bodo Glimt, who are running away with the Norwegian League at the moment. Having said that, they did defeat the league leaders 4-2 on Saturday. And they really do have to look out for the number 10, Magnus Eichram. He's our club captain. He started off his career with Manchester United without breaking through to make any first-team games. But he did play under Solskjaer in the Premier League when Solskjaer was in charge of Cardiff City. He's a very creative player, Marie, with international experience for Norway. He's over 17, 17 caps. He scored two goals on Saturday against Bodo Glimt as well, and Dundalk will need to stop the threat that he poses in that team. He's a fantastic player. Their striker, Ohi Omoyiwanfo, he's a Norwegian player. He's played there his entire career. He scored 15 goals last year, and in doing so, he helped Molde win their first title in 4 or 5 years. He's got 7 so far this season, but their absence of their prolific centre forward Leek James, who suffered injury in that Ferencváros game, is going to be a big blow to them. So Omoyiwanfo is going to have to step up to the plate in probably one of the biggest games of his career.
How do you think they will rate the Dundalk challenge?
That's the thing, Maria. I would like to think that they're going to underestimate Dundalk, and that that would be the worst thing that they could do. Hopefully they looked at the game the other night when they played Derry City. They rested a good few players at the Ryan McBride Stadium. They rested Gary Rogers, Chris Shields, Brian Gartland, Patrick McElhenney, Pat Hoban. They all didn't start the game. I think that's a telltale sign that they will play tomorrow night. I'd like to think that they're going to underestimate Dundalk. I think it's Dundalk's best chance for a victory in this group, if I'm being totally honest, and yet they're still going to be very, very much up against it. But their performances in Europe have made me like a little bit optimistic about it, so hoping that to see a good game and a good performance tomorrow night.
Conan, you mentioned they need to step up, but it is all new for new manager and 15 players within that squad. They weren't around for the brilliant campaign in 2016.
No, they weren't, and especially for Dave Agnoli, who never managed the senior team in his life.
Let's not go there. It's just a small thing.
In fairness, he's done a remarkable job, as I talked about, which is before. He's just brought the whole group together and made it about us against them mentality, and it's worked so well for them, and I just really hope that now that they can enjoy these next few games. I know, like, people will say, oh yeah, we don't want to, we wouldn't want the League of Ireland to be, I don't know, disrespected by getting hammering, but they didn't get that in Shamrock Rovers. It didn't happen to Shamrock Rovers back in 2011. It didn't happen to Dundalk in 2016. Only a goal between the teams in each one of those defeats, and I can see it being the same this time around with the experience that Dundalk have in their team. And as I said, six or seven players that have played in that 2016 campaign are still around in 2020, albeit a couple of years older. I do really feel that they're going to step up to the plate, like our League of Ireland teams always do.
Conan, we spoke before about the difficulties of scoring on the European stage. Not that you found it difficult, but you know it is quite hard. Where are Dundalk's goals going to come from in these group stages?
Maria, I don't know if that was a dig at me. I scored more own goals in Europe than I scored goals in the opposition. It's very, very difficult. Pat Hoban, he doesn't have a great strike rate in European competition. I mentioned that, which is before. But Dave McMillan does. He has brilliant goal scoring record. So it's going to be difficult. But when you have Michael Duffy, he's going to be up against 20-year-old Marcus Pedersen, an under-21 international for Norway. He's a very attack-minded, but he lacks experience in these games. So I'm going to be very interested to see how Duffy gets on against him and in those wide areas, try to get 1v1s and put balls into the box. Because if you do that, there's no better players in this in Ireland anyway than Pat Hoban and Dave McMillan to put them away. And as I just said there, they have the experience to do that.
Okay, Conan, well, we asked you before, and you seem to generally get these things right, yeah. So look, don't let us down now. Call it.
No pressure.
Oh, you had to ask me, didn't I? I'm actually going to go for a Malta 2-1 victory, so don't go mad, League of Ireland fans, at me.
And just before we do finish up, like this Malta game, like this is the one where they need to get points as well, really.
They do, absolutely. And as I said, there's not many household names in this team. But I'm kind of going on the performances in the Champions League qualifying round, coming up against Ferencváros, 3-3 away, 3-3 at home, and then they nil all away. So they went out and away goals, and it was just Ferencváros were up against Barcelona last night, and looking at the highlights, they were very, very good. Even though Barcelona obviously bet them in the end, but just coming up against the Dundalk team, and with the likes of Magnus Wolf Ikram, he's just a super, super player. And if they can keep him quiet, perhaps they may get a point, maybe even three if we're going to be lucky. But I just think that Malta will just have that little bit of an edge over them.
Okay, Conan, look, thanks so much for joining us. We were hoping to get to chat about the Champions League because Liverpool are in action against Ajax at 8 o'clock and Man City are playing Porto also at 8 o'clock and Real Madrid are now trailing Shakhtar Donetsk at 3-0, but we have no time because we're going to talk to Damien Lawler after this break about his new book. Thanks so much, Conan.
With Green Farm, a 100% natural range of cooked chicken, turkey and beef. Natural protein, your way.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, we're fortunate on Game On to call on our teammate Damien Lawler for his incredible knowledge of Gaelic games. But like all good journalists, there is plenty more strings to his bow. His new book, When the World Stops Watching, tells the real inside stories of what happens our top athletes when their sporting adventure ends. It's compelling and honest, but so too is the author who rejoins us. Damien, thanks for taking us another call on a totally different topic. Can you tell us, why did you write the book?
Thanks, Danica. Why did I write the book? I think the way it's going, I'll be writing the COVID book fairly soon, and the two of you will be the main
That's a really good idea.
Well. Yeah.
Sport 2020, the COVID stories.
No, come on, stay on topic.
No, no, no. Don't ever mention COVID to me again. How did I write the book? Why did I write the book? I think we're, the last few years, we're in an area of wellness and well-being for sure. I suppose I would have been working as a journalist there for the last 20, 25 years and would have been lucky enough to speak to people at the final whistle of major sporting events, and you'd share in their delight and their ecstasies or their downfalls or their heartbreak, and you'd see maybe a close quarters with their family, and maybe you get their trust and build up a relationship with them, and then they move on and you see them in other walks of life. And I suppose as the years have gone on, the idea was always in my mind. I think I mentioned it to you a few years ago, Marie, and vice versa. And I think as the years went on, I just saw more and more people speaking out about it. And I think maybe where Bernard Brogan and Paul Flynn both spoke about the difficulty of leaving the WhatsApp group of their teams and that being the most traumatic experience of their whole retirement, those kind of interviews stuck with me, and I just acted on that then. And I'm probably working in GAA all my life, so apart from Paul Flynn and Tony O'Regan, who offers his contribution as a sports psychologist, I kept it away from GEA. It's basically 16 athletes, all disciplines, team, individual, men's sport, women's sport, all that sort of a spread. And that's why I went at it. I probably started it late last year and it's out in the shelves now.
And Donica is one of those athletes that you spoke to, plenty of them, Damien, and a wide range. When you think of the themes that came through this book, was there anything that really took you by surprise?
Yeah, by surprise, Marie. The level of maybe stress or distress that some people experience along the way. And I suppose for a footballer called Paul McGee, that level got really extreme. And we joined Paul in this story at the start of the book where he's faced probably the biggest decision of his life, and that's whether to keep his life or not. That's how hard he took being a former Premier League player on the cusp of great, great things, a £1 million move to Coventry at the time, potential call-up to the Irish World Cup squad, and then injury struck, and he struggled to get back on track after that. But thankfully he did. It took a while. But it was actually when he packed up football, junior soccer, even over 40s, when that went from his life, that Paul really felt it. And then go to the other side of things. Like the interview and the chat I had with Donica for this book was a pleasure, because it was so deep, but it was such good fun as well. And you compare that maybe Paul's story to the likes of a Kevin Doyle, who was never happier than he is now, breeding horses in Wexford, back to his family farm, has his probably career move, has set him up for life, and he can devote now maybe his time to his passion. So the main thing for me, Marie and Donica, was 16 different athletes, and I have 4 academics there to tie it all together, to weave it all together. To avoid repetition was the thing for me, and I was really, really stressed about that myself. But I think, amazingly, nearly every story took a different turn. And I think you'll read it. It's a book you can dip in and dip out of, but equally, there's a strong thread there all the way throughout, whereby every story that comes up, there's nearly a sports psychologist or a consultant like Gary Keegan, or a former professional like Owen Reinisht, giving their opinion on how it happened, why it happened, and what needs to happen next. So that's kind of the way I took at it.
Damien, you look at it and you mentioned it's 16 athletes that come to the same point but all have different journeys to it. And you mentioned Paul McGee's, reading his experience was incredible. But at the end of every part of different interviews, there's a brilliant kind of section like cutting the herd, the value system, people before
yes.
products. You might explain that, the flight plan, the way you wrap them up within the book.
So I think, look at Donica, that for me was something on my mind the whole way through. And it would be, I won't say easy, but you could easily put 16 stories out there and just let them go stand alone. But what does that achieve, really? Does it, okay, you can look at their story and you can interpret things and you can perceive things. But I suppose, having written a few books previously, you wanted to feel like a proper book. And for me to do that, you had to have an exciting prologue and an intriguing epilogue. But you needed to be able to weave the whole thing together again, get all those stories bound together. Like, you told me a story about walking down the N11, Sil Organ Dual Carriageway. You weren't too long retired and you saw a person coming against you on a bike. And you wondered, if you met that person head on with a shoulder, would you be able to throw them back as far as you were able to do on the rugby field? And then you told me one night about going to the bathroom and your urine was brown or yellow, and it was the first time in 18 years that you hadn't been properly hydrated because you were no longer a pro athlete. So you have to make sense out of all those stories and frame them. And that's why I got Tony O'Gregan, Dr. Stephen McIver, Gary Keegan and Owen Reinisch. Now, all of these have been elite sports people themselves, but they're all now still working in the field. Owen works at Sports Ireland. Stephen and Tony are sports psychologists. And Gary Keegan is behind nearly every major success story this country's had in the last 10, 15 years. So I wanted those to put sense on every kind of story that was coming out, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned that, Tim, and it was something I found myself, and honestly, it's constant learning for me in terms of I'm over two years out of the sport now, and you're still adapting to coming away from the sport. And one of the things I mentioned to you was the lack of routine, and you know, for us, every morning we were checked on urine, and I can safely say, you know, barred the days after game, I wasn't dehydrated, and that was nearly like a shock to be dehydrated. Was there things within the book, Damien, that you found crossed over from different sports, areas that, you know, no matter what the discipline, the sports people are the same in their mindset?
Yeah, loss of identity was one. Number two, you guys never think about retirement. No, you're probably an exception, Donnie. I'm sure in a year or two out, you had some sort of an eye on it. But your career went on a lot longer.
He was about 14,
than
what I had.
Children's TV
is
falling, guys.
He was actually... Donica was looking up the state pension there for a while just to see how beneficial it might be.
It's like a true name.
I'd say loss of identity was one. Uncertainty was number two. Maybe not bothering to plan for your retirement until the very last minute was another one. And then maybe about 6 months later or a year later, when the confidence finally returned, noticing that they had qualities like determination, leadership, resilience, good teamwork, and then suddenly realising, well, I could use these skills somewhere else as well. I'm not just a sports person. I have been for a long time, but I can use these in other places. And certainly that was a learning process for people to take along the way. But like, as I said to you, the glory for me was every story was different. Nikki Simmons got 224 caps for the women's hockey team in Ireland. She devoted her whole life to qualifying for the Olympics. Didn't make it. Nikki more or less left the country in terms of how to deal with that. And she's still coming to terms with that, but she's well down the road to doing that now. Darren O'Neill, the boxer, Darren was captain of London 2012, our Irish team over there, and he probably felt the amateur probably thing was slipping away, and he's turned professional. So everybody's got a different outlook on it, and it's just fascinating. And I found the whole area fascinating, but doing the book and meeting people like Dunica and tying the whole thing together was a pleasure, really.
Damien, you probably know this, that I wrote the Where Are They Now column for about 10 years. And the one thing that I found is that nobody ever said no. So they'd been, when they stopped playing, the phone pretty much stopped ringing. You know, it's like it just moves on so quickly. And, you know, you lose a lot of the limelight as well. And people found that difficult to deal with. So they were very happy to feature in the column.
Yeah, and you know what? That actually was a prompt for me as well, Marie, because I remember some of the stories that came up in that column were incredible. And I think, did you interview Trevor Hogan for one of those columns, the rugby player? It possibly did, but Trevor, and Dunnick will know this too, Trevor ended up like on a flotilla with the Palestinian cause, and you know they were captured for a few days. And this was 6 days after, I think, he stepped down from Leinster Rugby and his contract. So it can bring you to all sorts of crazy places. And I think flick through all of them, like Niall Quinn kind of set up a movement called Catch a Falling Star and ended up as interim deputy CEO of the FAI. Kevin is off with the horses. Tommy Bowe is a presenter now. Dunica is doing his thing as a presenter as well. And you go down through it. Marcus Horan and Paul Flynn are now reinvested in educating players in rugby and Gaelic football as to what's to come next. So it is fascinating to look at their journey. And maybe two or three people weren't ready to talk about their story yet, and they said, no, I can't just yet. But Marie, funny you mention it. Once I got chatting to people, they didn't want to stop talking about it. It was a really passionate subject about theirs, and they all said the same thing. Nobody thinks about this until you're out the other side.
The Where Are They Now conversations used to last about 3 hours. But Damien, I think it's important to make the point as well. I saw you tweet about the support that you got from your local bookshops, and everybody's going to be buying books now in the run up to Christmas, and it's vital that they support the Irish bookshops, you know, the Easons, the Dubray Books, the Hodges Figgis, the Ravens Books, the Gutter Bookshops, Books Upstairs. There's so many of them, your local ones as well, and not to go to the big giants and get them sent over.
Well, that's a great point you raise, Marie, because you can hop on Amazon and have it in a couple of days later, or you can do maybe the proper thing to do in the current environment. And I have to say, like, I'm obviously from Tipperary, living in Nace, and the Bookworm shop in Turles and the bookshop in Nina, the independent bookshop, have been nothing only superb to me and given me a hand, because I'm probably one of theirs. I'm living up here in Nace, and Barker and Jones have just been incredible. The window displays and everything. And like, this means a huge amount to me, because it's an individual concept book, and it's not a big name autobiography. There's not huge money thrown at it. I mean, every person I spoke to gave their time to me free of everything. And to be being supported in a year like this, that's just massive. And, you know, a bit of creativity too in Ireland at the moment, like, is to be welcomed. And there's lots of good news stories in there too. So hopefully with that support, then the book will go well. I think it will, but you're dead right, Marie. It's easy going to the big chains and international chains and give them more millions. But the independent shop needs them more than ever this time around.
Absolutely. Damien, your book is fantastic. When the World Stops Turning, Life After the Game. It is a sports topic, but I think anyone that picks it up or anyone that's thinking about retirement, there's such crossovers within it. It's just heightened by the factor of sport. But we're so grateful to you, and we look forward to catching you up with you soon.
Thanks, Damien.
Okay, I got the name wrong, didn't I? When the World Stops Watching.
Close.
Apologies, yeah.